Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk More Movies, the show where we try and talk about movies, but never talk about anything and everything else. I'm your host, Michael Breslin. To my left is...
Michael.
To my right...
Colm Hearn.
What was that? We accent you on there now for Hearn.
Huh?
To my right.
My name is Alejandro.
My name is Alejandro. You could be a wee voice actor or something, Mickey.
As I've always thought this.
Yeah, Pixar's missing a beat. In fairness, you do a fucking incredible Cleveland. Shit show, but a really good Cleveland. Do your Cleveland going, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, that's nasty.
That's not me. That's pretty good. Really good, like, isn't it?
Buy that for a dollar.
No, when I was at uni, part of, like, our sound module was you had to do an ADR piece. So I chose a piece from Cleveland, the Cleveland show, because I could do the voice of Cleveland and I could do the voice of the bear. So
do the bear's voice.
Oh, fuck. So Cleveland, when you're going to get your boy back?
See, was the line. I have no point. I know what the bear's like.
That is dead on, Jen. Trust me.
Trust me, that is false. What were you going to say anyway before I really interrupted you?
I don't think this is going to say anything. I'm just trying to think of more Cleveland things to say.
I'm sorry I opened this can of worms.
Yeah, fuck it. How is everyone?
I'm good.
Nice way to have it is.
Feeling a bit hungover. I don't know why, because we went out last night.
Not the dream 10 pints you had, look.
No, that's upset. I didn't drink that much. I think it's the age.
You say this all the time. Like, I don't, like, you think, oh, I'll just have a couple of drinks, and then you have, like, a 10 glass or something.
I didn't have a 10 glass last night, Michael, but then when I was chatting
I'm
the other one.
I'm here at a 10 glass, and there's a third left in it. Like, so putting two together, like.
fair enough. I was drinking from it.
No, because when I was talking to you earlier as well, you were all...
I was chatting to Mike earlier on the phone. I said, I didn't even drink that much. And then I started tallying up the drinks. And I got to, like, drink eight. And I was like, oh, no, you know what?
It's all... Well, I had, like, four drinks at the bar. And I had a couple when I came home. And I only had a couple before I left. And I was like, oh, wait.
Shannon's about 12 drinks. That's more than your average person.
But you were regaling me of what you did when you came home last night. And I was just thinking, like, I don't think Shannon remembers that he was messaging me last night. Tell me what he was doing.
Wait, what was the message? No, he's eating spaghetti?
He's messaging saying what he had. I just cooked some spaghetti.
Can I mind that?
It was like 3:15 in the morning.
I tell you something, wasn't bad.
Sound like what? Spaghetti and like you cooked in chicken stock or something?
Cooked in chicken stock and then I had some chicken chunks and peppers on it. It was mighty fine. It wasn't bad for a fucking 3 o'clock in the morning effort.
Because you told me this like a couple of weeks ago that you do is like, actually cooking the spaghetti in the stock, like I never thought about doing that.
It's delicious, man. Delicious.
Fucking delish,
man.
Because like, because I've done it with like risotto and stuff, obviously.
White wine and chicken stock or whatever stock you got,
you know. Or whatever wine you have.
Well,
but a Buckfast in there, right.
Just fuck a bottle of vodka, dude.
It's like, oh, we're all out of wine.
That's what happened. That bottle of vodka. I was cooking me just.
Vodka.
I was. I'd all went into the chicken stock early.
Spaghetti surprise.
Yeah, surprise is you're fucking hammered.
But like, one bite it. Get for your fucking jaw.
One bite. You just keel over.
Danger bottle.
Is that our voice? That you
I like to throw on a wee evil laugh.
You're trying
something.
To get your fucking tight five down there.
Your tight five.
It's not a character you're working on. Just
yeah. Old lady. But, oh yeah, it's Danger Bottle. I think Danger Bottle's changed in the last few weeks.
Mm.
It was normally...
It's just we,
it's normally somebody buys a bottle of hooch, but... none of us have money, so yeah. We've all been forced to become a bit more creative.
We spent the podcast fortune that we amassed over the past year and a half.
It's a master of invention.
£2.87.
That's how we're up there now.
I think so.
It was kind of lingering at 85p for a long time.
Couple of quid, like.
When it gets
offered for my fucking Xbox. I tell you about that.
Oh, wow.
this is a beautiful story because you learn so much about Shan and the CEX shop.
Went up the CEX the other day,
sex
which
shop.
Is the sex shop, which is essentially a pawn shop.
Was James on?
I don't know anybody who works in there, to be honest with you. But I was really fucking skint, and I've got an Xbox 360 that's just been lying in the spare room for about 10 years, right. Or not 10 years, sorry, about 2 years, never fucking used. So I thought, I'll shed this here, hopefully get about fucking £25-30 for it. Because you see ones in the window and they're selling them for like fucking £70 still. So I went down there and the boy says, sorry, hey, we've just had two Xboxes come on, so you're going to have to wait like an hour and a half, you know, because we have to test them out and stuff like that. So I was like, for fuck's sake. Went down and sat my granny's for an hour and a half, fucking twiddling my thumbs. Went back up, right, went to the till, and the gear says to me, you know, there's a bit of corrosion inside that controller, so, you know, we wouldn't be able to take the controller. I was like, no bar, it's grand, I'll take the controller back, but what about the console? And she told, wouldn't really be worth it without the controller. So I was thinking, all right, she's probably going to knock about a tenner off here, might be getting about £20-25 for it at this rate. I said, how much are you offering anyway? £2.
Do you want a controller?
£2 for it? No, it's no odds. I don't use it, but £2 for a full fucking console.
I don't use it either. I have one. No,
you just could probably combine and maybe get a tenner for
it. See, if we combine and get a tenner, we can go to fucking Bennigan's and we have five rich.
I'll give you a controller. Hey, because my mom got the Red Ring of Death, and then it was in the insurance time, but I just was a lazy console and bought it fixed.
I can get it. How can you do it? Like, I never thought that I'd be insulted over somebody offering me money for you wouldn't even stretch it to a fucking fiver. Like,
that's not even like...
It's not even noteworthy. It's
just over half a pint. Like.
Aye. You know what I mean? And the best thing is that what I didn't understand, they're selling them for £70 in the window, but they're buying them for £2.
They probably
capitalist, man.
They probably wouldn't have sold that one, though, because yours is an older one, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know.
No, this is what Harry was saying, but Harry's very matter-of-factly about things that he's not matter-of-factly about.
Well put.
Cut that. is we hard to be broken down? Mind my joking, Harry.
Your lasagna was delicious. Wasn't it?
Beautiful. yeah, so back to Danger Bottle. we've been forced to get a bit more creative and whatnot, and obviously the brown sauce cocktails happened. The video is now up on YouTube. You can check it out. Search Let's Talk More Movies, or you can search episode 62.
Is it on our Facebook?
Danger Butt. I also posted it on the Facebook Let's Talk More Movies podcast, so you'll be able to find it, watch it, and watch Shan nearly boke.
I seen you two fucking about the chocolate as well, fuckers.
Apparently, Scruff, the master composer, has an idea for a fourth.
He does.
That he wants to test out. He wants to check the viscosity of how it turns out.
It's a strong word for that time on a Saturday. Like.
I know.
Viscosity. he didn't reveal his hand last night, but I'm intrigued. I know as well that he is a sinister fucker. So yeah. His is going to be really bad.
He's going to cook this up in the lab.
A brown sauce? No.
I know.
Cut me out.
No. But anyway.
Try and I'll watch and drink cans.
This week is a mystery shot type thing of Danger Bottle, because literally I had no money, so I found something in my kitchen and I poured it into tiny jars.
Okay.
So drink it and see if you can.
Why is it? Why is it always a mystery? Who you, Mickey? Why does it always have to be a mystery?
Because I'm an enigma.
He's a
Can we get this over done with? Because after last time, that brown sauce, I don't trust you too much, and
it's not bad. It's literally just pure alcohol.
Are we on the same? Thing.
I know, it's all the same, so just test it and you'll know what it is.
This actually smells nice.
Did you make this?
Nah. It doesn't actually.
Did you make this?
No, it's just a bottle of alcohol. Yeah, it's just
one. How powerful is...
Is this
40p?
Is
this the fucking Dutch or the German stuff?
No.
I'm going to take a wee sip just.
Citrusy? Citrusy. Notes of citrus, mate.
Notes of citrus. They're my favourite notes.
What the fuck is that? What the fuck is that? Just part of me dying just.
Oh my god.
Just describe it. What's going on? What's the sensations in your mouth?
It tastes sort of like vodka, but that's quite citrusy, but it leaves a fucking serious burn. It's burning me the whole way down, burning me deep.
Come on,
what
man.
Is it? I think I've
I think Heron will know this.
I think I've had that is before them.
Yeah, burn you definitely have.
Is it that corn stuff?
No.
No?
Literally just, oh fuck, whole shot.
Whole one, gone. I put an afterburn on there.
It's nice though.
I don't mind it.
Clears out the old sinuses again.
You know what it is?
I can't remember.
Orangey...
It's orange. What is it?
Quantro.
Quantro?
Yeah.
Oh, I seen that ball last week. Is your sister not going to be raging?
Probably. Although, actually, I was talking to her the other day, and she already assumed that I had drank it all, and I was like, no, it's still there. And she was like, oh, sweet, I'll come around and get them. I was like, well, you assumed I'll drink it.
Like.
Might as well fucking drink it.
Quantro cheesecake, I can eat.
That'd be nice, actually. Boozy cheese.
Carrot cake. That's right. Ooh, Michael, carrot cake with a carrot cake. I love how slowly but surely this is turning into like a food podcast. I love. Although I will bring up, just speaking about cheesecake, that Michael's wife to be Jill Jesus done Christ. An absolute. You're right there.
Fuck, sorry, Six. Sorry.
My dog Jesus just scared Christ. The fuck out of her.
I had a bit of skin peeking out just at my shirt there, and I felt something like, what the fuck?
Oh, she licked you.
Aye. And then I was all, what the fuck? And then I felt a hair. I was like, oh, Jesus.
It's a rat.
Giving you a wee wash just. But Michael's wife to be, Jill, made a fucking absolute titan Kinder Bueno cheesecake last week.
Kinder Bueno
cheesecake. It was nice. God dang good.
Was it made from Kinder Bueno, or was it just she got the ingredients to match or whatever?
No, she just fucked on a Kinder Bueno. Just made a cheesecake, fucked a Kinder Bueno in it. Like, you know,
it's my favorite kind of cooking. It's not fucking all on.
Aye, one pot wonder. Why not?
No Michelin stars here. Like,
you have you drank your Cointreau?
I did it.
Lovely.
Aye, you drink yours.
I have to drink a rest of it now, do you? I don't really like it that much.
Damn it, you fuck.
Down the hatch, you fucking cunt.
Yeah, that's nice though.
It's orangey.
But it's just, I don't think it's in my taste.
So you don't like it then?
Aye, but I respect it. Yeah, but I respect
you, can
it.
You can appreciate where it's coming from. Like.
Aye.
Okay. What have we watched this week, folks?
I watched Fistful of Dollars. It's on TV, have you ever seen it, Mike?
Is that the one where they paint the town red?
No, that's High Plains Drifter.
Oh, okay, I've seen that one.
People would say it's like the fourth one, but it's not. It's like a Netflix ghostly kind of thing. Isn't it? It's not. It's similar, and obviously you can see that, but they're nodding. But it's like a kind
it's like
of
a spiritual companion.
It's a spiritual companion.
It was my favorite.
But it's mean companions. The character's dead at the start, doesn't he? And then he comes back to life to come to this town.
The very spoilers for this film is like you see like the gravestone or some shit at the very end.
But I know Fistful of Dollars, it's the first in the what they call the Mammoth No Name trilogy or the Spaghetti Western trilogy.
Yeah.
And it's Clint Eastwood and it's directed by Sergio Leone. And it has GM Maria Vellante as fuck. Because he's in the first two, but he plays two different characters. But I know it's just a really it's one of these things where there's a teacher of ours we've talked about a few times, Brian McGilloway, said it's a very simple story made very, very well. And yeah. I think that's kind of what it is. I mean, it's essentially, if any of the readers out there, it's
got a reader.
Dashiell Hammett's Red Harvest. It's pretty much the exact same story of a character goes into a town and starts to pit two, because the town's very small, but it has two powerful families. And he starts to put them off against each other and this kind of thing. And ends up getting kind of caught up in himself and sort of working for one family while working for the other and pretending that he's not and all this kind of stuff and all. And
is that why it's called Fistful of Dollars?
Because it's all about money. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole thing's about money. Like, it's about how he makes money. He's just he's kind of just a fucking con artist, really.
Yeah.
But he's a very, very fast shot. You know, he's very quick with a gun.
That's a film, isn't it?
Quick with a Gun.
Something like that.
Quick and the Dead.
Is that the Gene Hackman one?
Aye, Quick and the Dead. But
that's a weird
one. No, it's very good. It's one of these films that because everybody goes the good, the bad, and the ugly, because it's the third one, it's the biggest one, and it has the Civil War, and it's a big 2.5 hour, it's a fucking epic, like, and it's brilliant. Everybody thinks about that one, but the second, the other two are just as good. The first one, I think, is probably the tightest. You know, it doesn't really fuck around much, and there's not big long sequences in it, or long shots in it. But, it's very, very good. The thing that always wondered about that trilogy, though, is, because in the second one, there's a character called character played by Lee Van Cleef, who's in
Escape from New York,
and he plays, I think they call him Colonel Mortimer, right? And it's sort of hard to tell, because he's in the third one as well, it's sort of hard to tell whether he's playing the same character in the second and the third one, because in the third one he's just called Angel Eyes.
Yeah.
But he is a colonel in the army of the... I can't remember which army he's in. He's either in the... It's not the Confederate army. Shan,
yep.
Which army is Lee Van Cleef in and The Good, the Bad, and Ugly? Is the Confederate army or...
Union?
I think it's probably that. I can't really remember. It probably would be the Confederate, because Sovereign States and it takes place around Mexico and stuff, so they'd have more access. I can Wikipedia and whatever.
Do you think, right, because you know a GM Maria Vellante plays, you know, he's a baddie in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, the spoilers, he dies at the end of the first one, Clint fucking takes him down. And then, in the second one, then, he's obviously not playing the same character because it's impossible.
Yeah.
He's dead.
But I'm wondering, yeah, in the second one and the third one, is Lee Van Cleef playing the same character?
I don't know. I never read that much. I always just assumed that he was.
I see, well, because I think...
Is Clint playing the same character?
That's why they call it the Man with No Name trilogy. Yeah, because it's essentially vague, just... Like, the three of them are kind of just fables, really.
Yeah.
Because the first one, he's called Joe. And that's only because somebody calls him Joe. You know, he never says that's his name. And the second one, he's called Manco. And that's the name he uses because he's a bounty hunter. And that's the name he's using to fucking cash his checks, really. That's it.
Mm.
And then the third one, the boy just calls him Blondie.
Yeah. It's fucking Eli Wallach, isn't
it? Eli Wallach. I wonder, is he the same character? But no, just saying, because it's...
Right, well, it's... Nah, but it seems it, nah. Because it says here
I know, because he's Angel Eyes, and then he's Captain... He's more, but he's a colonel.
Angel Eyes in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And then, in For a Few Dollars More, he's Colonel Douglas Mortimer.
Aye, Mortimer. But I mean, that's what I'm saying, though. He says he was a colonel. That's before
the
war.
It could be like a wee illusion.
Did he go back into the war then, when it kicked off again, the Civil War? That's what I always wondered. Do you know what I mean?
It could be. I mean, like, if you read
but
it,
why
like
would you
way,
be calling a colonel, Angel Eyes?
No, it's a nickname that's given to him by Eli Wallach, because he calls Clint Eastwood Blondie, and he calls him Angel Eyes in it. Clint Eastwood never says his name, like.
Yeah.
It's the only scene that you can kind of figure out, maybe, did he know him or not, is because... Tuco and Clint Eastwood get fucking busted and get taken into a concentration camp where Mortimer or Angel Eyes or whatever runs, and it's so subtle, it's hard to tell whether they know each other from before or not. Yeah. But I mean, he brings Clint Eastwood into this, and I think he just knows because he knows all of him or something. It's hard to know whether, you know, they know him, but he talks to him familiarly.
Familiarly.
Fuck, that's what they say. I know, familiarly.
It's some difficult pronunciations in the podcast so far.
Viscosity, familiarly. I can't even say that.
There you go.
He talks to him with familiarity.
Familiarity.
Is that the way we go
that way.
But, no, I was just saying, well, that's for a topic for another thing. Like, but,
topic for another day.
But then, no, the first one's magic. The first one's the tightest. It doesn't waste much time at all, really, and it's still just as good. And it's more violent, and it's more, you know, when they're shooting all the family, when they're coming out of that burning house and all.
Yeah,
I think it's a bit more violent and a bit more dark.
Well, I must rewatch the first two.
The first two are fucking
so
amazing.
So fucking long.
We should stick it on the film club.
We definitely should. Good, the bad, and ugly in general. We get a fucking crowd, like.
Aye.
But then it'd be class. They show like.
We should show the other
stuff.
Two. Yeah. The second one's badass.
Do you ever think we could do a trilogy day or something, like an all day kind of thing?
Now, well, when we get this public domain thing, you know, out there, we can do all day trilogies. The fucking cows come home on a Sunday.
What was the saying though? Because The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, because considering one of the best films ever, it does really overshadow the Orty. That's kind of a pity because the Orty are sweet as well.
The Orty, that's what was exactly why I was saying it, because I just flicked it on as well. It's a really hard film to turn over because it's that it's engrossing. Music's that good, the editing's that good. It's so original, the sound of the guns, and all so specific to those films. And it's just seriously only like he's fucking lethal
genius.
But as you were saying, like you feel like the first one's the tightest, and then like the second, third kind of got a bit bigger and more.
Well, they did, but it's not that they got more elaborate, right?
But do you think
they have longer sequences? I think it's because he liked long sequences, long musical sequences.
But do you think that's him getting more kind of creative freedom as they were getting bigger?
100%.
And so like he was keeping the first one tight because it was the first one and they didn't have as much
pretty
control.
Much, probably. I think it was his first English speaking film. Yeah. Like he's an Italian director and all. But it was his first English speaking film. Like, but that was Clint Eastwood's sort of role, his first big role before that. He was just doing Rawhide, the TV series.
Yeah.
And he's allergic to smoking, which a lot of people don't know. He's like, because famously in The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, he smokes cigars all the time. And he was smoking a cigar and he was just like squinting. And then Sergio Leone's like, do that.
The scene, like, I can't help it.
He goes, well, for the rest of the film, he's on off the rest of your career. Because that's a classic one.
Also,
that just looks like you're kind of, that looks like a real character face. Like.
Allegedly common sense as well. It was comments this week are to be taken into consideration.
Why, but we'll not go on that.
He's saying he's pro-Trump and like Trump knows what he's doing. I know. I think that the whole angry old man character, Clint Eastwood has just become that now. Like, you know what I mean?
He's just become a better bastard. He doesn't want shit to change. Actually, no, he wants to change back the old conservative fucking. He's pro-guns and all that shit.
Oh, wow. I didn't realise that. I was kind of disappointed because Clint Eastwood's a fucking badass and I love him. Like, but then... Yeah, well, you always say, we're not getting on there, but you always separate the politics and the man's work. Like, but it's just
sometimes you do sort of think, like, obviously, I mean, Dirty Harry, it's too ridiculous about walking under me a big fucking dirty 357 Magnum. The fucking, you know, the force of that gun could fucking, like, sling you on your back. Like, it's a fucking serious
but
piece of
fucking
even
shit.
The recoil could fucking do your arm on, like, unless you fucking really grow out of it. Like,
they're mental, like, and then, as remember, we had this conversation before, American Sniper and all, about, Bronco Billy and all, like, and those are cynical American films.
Yeah.
But it's hard in a way. You wouldn't know unless you got around shit at them, just how you do you really believe all that fucking shit you're saying on a fucking
strange
Trump
as well, because you would always think of films like Dirty Harry, or even films like, well, maybe not Death Wish. A lot of people say, oh no, but they're not pro-violence because they're showing you the bad side and stuff like that there. But then you think to yourself, like, Clint Eastwood, because of his ideals and stuff like that, does he really believe in
does
that
this he
is
really
the way
believe
forward?
Dirty Harry, everybody should have a peace.
Everybody should go about and just, you know, give out their own fucking justice and stuff like that, which is a dangerous fucking concept. You know what I mean? Mm. I don't know, but like Heron says, I don't think you would know unless you got to chat that man. Like, but he called us, we apparently are the pussy generation.
He did,
which is nice. Nice.
Slowly. I would go along with that.
Fuck him.
Fuck him. Class films.
What I'll say is just alright. No, well, I mean, if you haven't seen any of the spaghetti westerns, I'll say watch them all. Obviously, but I think if you have seen them, more than likely, if you've only seen one of them, more than likely it's The Good, the Bad and Ugly, which is the big one.
Yeah.
The other two, the first two, are brilliant. They're really, really well-made films.
And the first two are Fistful of Dollars and...
Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More.
Ah, okay.
And then
there's Fistful of Dynamite, but that's the start of the other trilogy.
It's the next trilogy, yeah.
And once you've finished that original trilogy, get on with the second one then and watch Once Upon a Time in the West, which... I don't know, I think Once Upon a Time in the West might be better than Good, Bad and Ugly. I think it's tight.
I think it is. I prefer... I think it's more visual. It's more...
Yeah.
Just there's a lot more.
A stronger storyline.
It's just clear.
Because I mean, like, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is very standard fucking
story. But they are rough as bags. That's sort of the point of the style of them. Like.
But I actually think that Once Upon a Time in the West, even narratively, is quite refined. It sort of stands out amongst the spaghetti westerns because not only is it quite a good storyline.
Once Upon a Time in the West?
Once Upon a Time in the West, Not only is it a good storyline, but there's so many different disparate characters. Even though we usually in a western, I'll just focus on the good and the bad.
And the ugly.
But. That's got, like, you know, there's a strong female voice and stuff like that. You know the way, like, in westerns, women were, because it's what he called, Claudia Cardinal? Or whatever it was. You know, like, because women, especially, like, the old John Wayne, John Ford westerns, women are kind of relegated to being just the fucking childbear who are there for the man. They kind of nurse him when he gets, you know, beat down or something like that there. And I don't know, they're kind of 2D. But it's nice in that film, she's... a person.
It's class. But no, get a look at it if you haven't seen it already. If it's $5.
Cool. This week I watched Paper Planes.
Still mean to watch it.
Did it just come on Netflix or is it on Netflix?
Last week? Should we mind we found it at the same time when we were Netflix hopping?
It's a fun pastime. You don't actually watch anything. You just spend an hour looking through Netflix.
Yeah, I am unemployed and I do it daily. Looking for them hidden gems. Although I did find yesterday that Cocaine Cowboys is on Netflix and I've always meant to watch
it. Is that meant to be good?
It's a documentary just about the kind of drug trade in the 70s and 80s. Apparently it's supposed to be like, it's like an epic documentary because it's like fucking 2 hours, 40 minutes long or something. I've always meant to watch it, but yeah, come up with for a documentary. Like. But nah, I'm only joking. I am thinking about giving that a go, but anyway, gonna talk about your film.
I know, it's like go from Cocaine Cowboys to Paper Planes, the most fucking opposite films. Oh, Paper, actually, I should have looked this up. Go and look up for me when it came out, because I think it's pretty recent.
I think it's, isn't that like last year, so my phone is about to die. I'm a 3%, fuck, can I get this information?
Oh, Jesus Christ!
I'm nearly sure it's like 2014 or so.
But yeah, it's an Australian film about...
Is it? No, I'll be watching that.
It's an Australian film about this kid who...
For fuck's sake, I typed Paper Planes in the Wikipedia and got the Wikipedia page of actual Paper Planes. Fuck's sake.
IMDb, man, IMDb.
Nah, I'm on it. Here we are, Paper Planes film. Actually, it was released 2015, so it was last year.
There you go. But yeah, it's...
It's a 3D family drama? What the fuck? I've completely misread this film. I thought it was like a small American indie.
No, it's Australian.
Australia, mate.
It was 3D as well. That makes sense. Obviously, I didn't watch it 3D.
Oh, fuck, I'm down to 2%.
But yeah, it's an Australian film, and it's about this young kid in school.
Are you literally reading the plot?
No. I'm looking up the kid's name because he's really good on it. It's about this young kid in school, and a guy comes one day, and they bring the whole school into the hall, and he's all like, oh, we're going to make paper planes, and it's supposed to be, like, an activity for that evening, that day or whatever, but he says, oh, if anybody can throw over 25 meters, that's what you need to qualify to get into the paper planes national championship or something like that. Okay. And they're not trying to get people to go on it, he just says it as, because he's a paper plane aficionado, apparently, but... The main kid, and I'm trying to get his name here, he throws his paper plane, and they're in like the school hall, so they don't have 25 meters to go, but then like a teacher walks in through a door, and then the paper plane goes out the door, and then through the hallway and all and outside, and it's amazing how much emotion you can build in. They just a paper plane flying.
Did you cry, my big dog, a flare?
I didn't cry at that, but no, but like, cause like, honestly, I knew what the film was about. Like, he goes to like the paper plane championship and all is here. But
is that a thing? Did you research this?
I don't know, but the world championship is set in Japan, so that seems legit.
Yeah. Seems like it would.
Just they're just crazy enough to do it.
Yeah, fairness as well, there's festivals for way less. Like, I mean,
Ed Oxenbold is the main kid. He plays Dylan, but he's really good. I was kind of blown away by him a little bit because he's just really natural, and I don't know, we like kid actors. It's like they can either be really natural just because they're being a kid, or they can be
the sort of situation,
or they can be really kind of stage showy, like, yeah, and be acting kind of.
I've always said as well that I think when we talked about this before in the podcast that with child actors, I think for a lot of directors, as long as they can get a passable performance, I think a lot of directors are happy with that because it's so tough to get a really good performance out of a child, you know, that not just because of their age, but because they're just not as experienced, really.
Yeah.
But I think it's all the more impressive. I think it always sticks out if you see a really good child performance, because it's like, fuck, that's a win, like, you know what I mean? And they're way more talented than what I am. Well,
the whole film kind of rests on his shoulders, like, because, like, storyline-wise, it's not doing anything spectacular, you know, it's based around this paper playing competition, but, you know, he gets through the next round and the next round, then the world championships, you know, like, it's pretty standard stuff and you kind of can see where it's going, but the best thing about it for me was the relationship with his dad. His dad's played by Sam Worthington, and his dad's just he's clearly just depressed and
remember him.
Remember him. But I really like Sam Worthington in this film.
It's like last year.
Couple of years.
No, just last year. Last January.
Right. It's a small Australian film, like. Right. But shared in it.
Australia.
But
no work in Ireland, one's Australia.
Is that just play he's depressed and like when you first see him he's just sleeping on the sofa watching like old sports videotapes like.
Maybe they just follow him Sam Worthington because it's pretty funny. Shit.
I really liked him in this.
Because I was never Wild Foster. Although I like that film Man on the Ledge. I really like that one. But
does anybody else not think that Sam Worthington is a kind of like an anomaly in Hollywood because he had because
he wasn't really an actor. He got lucky on a few things. I actually thought he was the best thing in Terminator Salvation.
I don't understand why Christian Bale gets so much hit. As I think he's the best John Connor.
He is.
You know what I mean?
He was supposed to die in the film, though. But I think contractually he says, I'm not doing it unless I'm... Because it was going to be a trilogy.
Obviously, there was a lot of hate because Arnie's not on it, but Jesus Christ, let go, because he can't be the Terminator forever. Hence why fucking Rise of the Machines was so fucking shite. But, Genesis, not Rise of the Machines.
Well, that was shite.
That was shite. That was shite as well, but Rise of the Machines and Genesis. But, like, that's fucking Salvation. It's a really solid film.
I know, I like Salvation.
But it's a good film, like.
Well, you know, directed by my fave, McGee, you know what I mean?
That type fucking pulled that one a little bit, because he is horrific.
That's like his own.
Anton Yelchin as well, is Kyle Reese.
R.A.P. Anton.
Is he as fucking...
He's Kyle Reese.
Do I hate when they keep using the fucking come with me if you want to love it all? It's just like, just pack it in.
I know.
See fucking Emilia Clarke's delivery of that line in Genesis, so it was...
I hop in a van.
Awful. It was terrible. It was like... She's just so wooden and blank expression on her face saying, come with me if you want to. There was no, like, when they say it, like, it should be all, oh, fuck, they're saying it. But it's just like, you don't even want to drive this bus. Like.
This goes back to the old idea that most Game of Thrones fans, like, they kind of brush over that Emilia Clarke actually isn't that good an actress. Because even as Daenerys, she's just passable. Like.
Apparently she was good in that. Romantic one she did recently, the Me Before You.
Me Before You. I don't know. I can't comment though. But I mean, I think she's a very limited actress.
But she seems fun to hang out with though.
She's fun to die.
Oh my!
Nearly went up blue here. Just
anyway, Sam Worthington's depressed, right?
So he's dead by a lamb, man.
That was a crab one there. Yeah. Sidewinder.
Speaking of lamb, is there ever tell you that joke?
What?
It's there's not a do with lamb in it, but it's a couple who are fucking away on their honeymoon, right?
They were fucking on their honeymoon, or they were away.
They were away on their honeymoon. I just say fucking all the time, but. And they were walking on the beach and all, went out for a dinner on the beach and all, and then a bit cold and all, so when they come back into the house and all, the wife realises that her wedding ring's gone, and she's like, I was really handmade and all, and it took ages and all, this kind of thing and all, and the husband's all, I'm just getting the one made, it's right, don't worry about it, and she's like, no, fucking all, whatever. So anyway, they obviously stay married, they get the fucking wedding ring and all that kind of thing, and 10 years later they go back for their anniversary and all, and so they're dining along the beach and all, same place, and she starts to see a wee thing glistening in the sand, like a wee, and she sort of looks at the husband, she's like, fuck, that's sort of where I thought I'm in a lot, closer and closer and closer and all, and she starts to get really excited and all, and then she's about, you know, about a meter away from it, and landmine blows her two legs off.
So it was about a lamb.
I just want to throw you off a scent.
Now that we're telling jokes.
There we go.
No, look like you've Chris, done Chris, who has been on this podcast before, and he was back. He's back a few weeks ago. There, he told this cracking joke at the phone call.
The prison one.
It's fucking building. That's a belter.
Go on, you tell it here. I can.
He's all. This boy fucking gets busted and goes into prison and all, and it was like a petty crime. It wasn't whatever, but he gets sent down to this fucking really hard prison. And he's just like, oh, for fuck's sake. So he gets into the cell, this big fucking meathead boy, and the boy's just all fucking, he's all, right. do you want to be mommy or daddy? He's like, oh, for fuck's sake. So he says, no, I'd rather... He's all, I don't know, I'd rather give it than take it. Alright, fuck it. I'll give it and take it. He's all, I know, I'll be daddy, sure, and you be mommy's. Alright then, get down your knees and suck mommy's cock.
Powerful stuff.
How this all came up when I'm talking about like a sweet, charming Australian film about paper planes.
Fuck's sake.
CD man, just you're associating yourself with lunatics. Like, I've always said that, you have to surround yourself with lunatics.
That's the thing. You've only a wee spark of madness, you gotta keep it in.
Go ahead, I'm with paper planes.
No, the thing that kind of that I really enjoyed about the whole film is just the father-son relationship, and Sam Worthington's depressed and he doesn't want to go to work and stuff, and he's sleeping all day and just watching old sports videos and stuff and
trying to get acting jobs.
But the kid's just trying desperately to connect with him, and he's bringing up the paper planes thing as well, like, oh, like I have a chance to be in like the national final and all, and it's like, and there's a few sparks of Sam Worthington's like, right here, I'm going to help you. And he shows him like an old video of something. And he's all like, that's what you need to do. And he tells him to like study everything of flies and all this here kind of crap. And there's a few sparks of that he's trying, but he always gets just pulled back down into his depression. And there's one just really nice moment where his son's leaving him a message on the answer machine, but Sam Worthington's there listening to it. He just doesn't want to answer the phone. And the way the kid delivered the line, it was just so natural and just a way a person would genuinely say it. It wasn't overly sentimental or anything, but he just said to him, like, I'm sticking with you. And just from the way their whole relationship's going, and just what you know Sam Worthington's going through, and when he hears that, and it kind of breaks his heart a bit that the kid's thinking like that and stuff, and it's just, it was a really nice moment. Are you crying, Jan? Jan just started fanning himself. He's like,
oh, I'm really warm. But Liz, you're describing this very beautifully.
No, it was a really nice moment, and like ultimately, like the ending of the film, it's pretty standard, you know, you can see where it's going to go, but the thing I didn't 100% like about the film is it presents these ideas about competition and competing. Like there's the dickhead kid that all he wants to do is win, and if he doesn't win
by any
then,
means possible too, usually,
I like
the Nelson Muntz.
He just sees that if he doesn't win, then he's a loser, and there's no point in competing. All here, kind of guy, like just standard stuff.
Do they do that standard trope as well? That he's got like a really overly competitive dad as a coach or something.
No, his dad's actually really nice in it.
All right, that's nice. No, that one.
I know, because they kind of turn, because his dad's like a super successful like pro golfer. Like anytime they go to the competitions, everybody wants to take photos with him and all. And then the kid's all like this is my moment. This is when I become a champion. And all, and then he's like, you know, it's really just about having fun with it and all. And he's all, shut up, dad.
What would you know?
But Nelson Muntz. Simpsons?
Yeah. cracking out all.
don't put that one, your type 5. That wasn't as impressive. That was underwhelming.
I didn't give me full commitment. Anyway. What was I saying? They present these ideas of competing on, and they have the dickhead kid that all he wants to do is win, and then there's this Japanese girl that's in the finals with him, and she doesn't care about one, and she just wants to make something beautiful. Like she's all and doing like all origami stuff and stuff with it as well. Because there's a lot of paper folding in this film, but it's kind of cool just to see all the different stuff that they do with it. It's pretty cool. But so they're presenting these ideas of it's not about winning, and you know it's about taking part and just having fun with it and just making something beautiful, I suppose. But where the film ends up, like it kind of just disregards it. It doesn't have the strength behind those ideas. They actually kind of fall through in it.
Yeah.
So that kind of fell down for me a bit, but and the actual final bit is it's so cheesy and corny. I loved it. But it is actually all like, Jesus Christ, this is actually happening.
Bit much.
Like, aye, bit much, but...
You need packing a bit, like.
Packing a bit, but the strength for it, for me, is the Sam Worthington and the kid that I can't remember, Ed Oxenbold. They have a really...
Strong name.
It's a really good relationship that they build up, and I think the kid's amazing. He's just so natural, and he, like... All he wants is just his daddy see him. He just wants him to pay attention to him, and
I want that too.
That's why he's doing all this. Like, you know what I mean? And it's class.
Lovely.
Also, his granda is hilarious. And
I can picture his granda being an Alan Alda sort. Am I right? Or am I completely wrong?
Oh, more of a Stan Lee sort.
A Stan Lee sort.
An Australian Stan Lee, I would say.
I like it.
No, because when you first meet his granda, like, his granda lives in like an old folks home, but you find out in the first meeting of his granda that he's basically like a gigolo for this old people's home.
I like him already.
It's because you just see him with this old woman, and the kids are like, oh, who's that woman? He's like, oh, I was just helping her out with someone. And then they have this whole conversation, and then the granddad's all, oh, this is me now, and knocks on a door, and this other old woman comes out, and the kids are like, you going to help her as well? He's all,
no bother.
But the granddad's just, he's just hilarious at it as well. It's pretty, he's a lot of fun.
Lovely stuff.
But yeah, it's cool. It's on Netflix. Check it out. It's only 1 hour 36 minutes with credits.
That's what we like to hear. It's 1 hour 30. But
fuck off.
This week I watched Central Intelligence.
What do you reckon?
Do you know what? I don't really like Kevin Hart that much, but it's a pretty. Do you know what?
I think Kevin Hart's good. He just keeps picking shit films.
Because I've seen him. I remember you were chatting about him in 5 Year Engagement, and he's a wee small part in that there. But it's nice. You know what? I think that my main like about the film, I was saying it to you last night, Mickey, is that Kevin Hart's not doing Kevin Hart. For once, he's the straight man. You know what I mean? He's playing the straight man, and The Rock is doing the sort of ditzy, over-the-top Kevin Hart sort of thing, which The Rock can do really well, too, because he don't have Pain and Gain, too.
I loved him in Pain and Gain.
He's the best
class.
Thing about Pain and Gain. Yeah. The Rock is just... Kevin Hart's good. He kind of won me over, because I don't really like a lot of the stuff. Actually, I don't like any of the stuff that he does. And then I love The Rock and everything, because he's just charisma fucking personified. Yeah. He can do everything. Like, I love as well. I was on his Wikipedia page the other day, and you know the way we always call him, like, Franchise Viagra. It's on his Wikipedia page. That's one of his fucking nicknames.
It's
Franchise Viagra.
Official thing.
But no, it's good. Basically, all it is Kevin Hart was like the coolest guy in high school and stuff like that. But then after high school, he just kind of got stuck in a rut, got a job as an accountant, married his high school sweetheart, and never really kind of achieved anything he wanted to achieve, because at high school, I think he was like a star basketball player or something like that. I think it's basketball. It's some sport anyway he's a star at.
Aren't you a little short to be a basketball player?
But then...
Star Wars paraphrase.
At university, at high school, The Rock was like really overweight and like really sort of camp and listening to really like shit music, and he was bullied and stuff. And the very start of the film is him being thrown out during like the leavers do for the high school, naked by all these fucking jock bullies, and Kevin Hart kind of helps him out by giving him his jacket to cover up. And it turns out then that obviously The Rock lost all the weight, became this
fucking Adonis.
became a CIA agent called Frank Stone. I love as well that Kevin Hart's wife calls him out, and he's like, that doesn't even sound like a real name. Like, that's like a CIA name, definitely. Or Frank Stone. But
so it's not his real name?
It's not his real name. No, he changed his name because his real name's like someone like Eric Weirdick or something like that.
Oh, yeah, it's Weirdick. And mine here in that era is like, really?
It's about full on. Like, there's some stuff like that I don't like. Like, the sort of stupid, like, the Weirdick humor. They don't really play it up that much. And then, even at the start, they have The Rock dancing in like a fat suit, and it's like...
I've seen The Rock talking about that. It's not a fat suit. That's his face superimposed on an actual guy dancing.
Well, that's even worse. Because it's like, really, are we just laughing because he's fat? Is that not kind of fucking lousy? Or like,
yeah, because he did it in, what do you call that one?
Just Friends. I don't like that. It's just kind of uncomfortable. It's like, all right, we're just literally laughing because he's fat. Like, there's no real humor there. Like, you know what I mean? That's like child's humor. You know, you might laugh at it when you're fucking six, but I don't like that. But then, I mean, like, that's literally brushed over after the first scene. And it's just nice. They've got a really good chemistry. You know, Kevin Hart's a really successful comedian, and you can tell they're having a bit of crack with it. And you can tell that they're ad-libbing a lot of it, because at the end, there's like a bloopers reel, and some of them are absolute fucking blinders, because Kevin Hart's saying, you know, you came back into my life as Frank Stone. Who the fuck calls himself Frank Stone? Who makes up a name for himself? It's just a fucking stupid name, like The Boss or The Fucking Rock or something. But anyway, just,
and then they'd fucking start pushing
themselves. I start pushing my legs, right? But just even going to this story, what it is anyway is that Kevin Hart is this accountant, and obviously The Rock has went off and become this sort of like black ops fucking CIA agent, and out of nowhere he comes back into Kevin Hart's life, and it kind of turns out during a film that The Rock has been obsessed with Kevin Hart for years, and he sees him as the coolest guy ever, even though he's just this mundane accountant now, because he's still kind of trapped in high school, because he's still got all these like repressed memories about being bullied and stuff. And that is one of the strongest things about the film. Like, The Rock has this sort of line that he keeps repeating any time that he just kind of hulks out and starts battering boys and goes all Jason Bourne, like fucking Kevin Hart says. He's all, there's one thing I can't stand, it's bullies. And I think nobody likes a fucking bully.
Well, he was actually bullied, wasn't he, The Rock, when he was a kid? Like, he possibly was overweight and stuff, I think.
I don't know. I'm not quite sure. I know he did have weight problems when he was younger, but I don't know, it's just a nice thing. I think that nobody likes bullies. I don't think it's addressed that much in films, but he kind of... He's like a defender of the little person, and it's cool.
That's actually it. I think they say that exact line in Paper Planes as well. Nobody likes bullies or something. Because there's a couple of instances with bullies in that as well.
There's a crack. I'm
like most Clint Eastwood films address bullies.
Mm. Yeah.
Actually, one of my
nearly all of them, too. No, but quite a few of them.
One of my favorite lines ever in any like film, TV show, whatever, is from one of the last episodes of Deadwood, and it's Timothy Oliphant. He plays the main character in Deadwood, Seth Bullock, and this boy's kind of rude under Deadwood and talk over, and he's just basically, he's really rich, so he's strong-arming everybody and beating them down and basically bullying the whole town. And I think it's just Oliphant's delivery, but he's literally like, he's that angry, he's like, the words are just about fitting through his fucking teeth, because he's just grinding his teeth at this boy. But he's all, I never met a bully that couldn't shut his fucking mouth. And he's just standing over this boy, about to wail on him, like, because it's like he's finally been caught. And it's always the fucking thing that it doesn't matter how big a bully, you're always going to meet somebody bigger. You know what I mean? They're always running, they'll always be caught out, like. But anyway, that's going to be the whole thing about bullies.
Fuck bullies.
Fuck bullies.
Is it kind of like Rush Hour?
Not as over the top. I thought it was going to be more over the top because the CAA and stuff like that, but it's well grounded. I think that's why I liked it too, that it wasn't too mad. You know what I mean? Christ, I always forget her name. Amy Ryans, I think, from Gone Baby Gone, who she got Oscar nominated for. She's like a CIA agent chasing her. And the whole thing in the narrative is that you don't know if The Rock is mental, because he does seem like really off the cuff. And it's like, you know, has he went mental from, you know, being the CIA for years, and because he was bullied, has he turned and become the Black Badger, which is this sort of narrative plot point? Or is it the CIA who are the Black Badger who stole these files? Or is it The Rock's former partner, who's played by Aaron Paul, but it's basically just a cameo, who's the Black Badger, and then you don't find out until the end. And when you find out at the end, it's pretty predictable, like, you know who the Black Badger's going to be.
It's Kevin Hart, don't know?
No, like, but it's pretty predictable who the Black Badger is, but it's just fun kind of getting there. And I think the whole film just kind of relies on their chemistry and charisma, and it's really fucking good. Like, there's actually an unbelievable, but one of the few times I was fucking laughing out loud, but The Rock is getting tortured by the CAA, and Amy Ryan is like fucking battering his hand in with a hammer, but you don't actually see it. He's just sitting there, being all and screaming and stuff like that. But then Kevin Hart breaks him out, and they're fucking battering boys and stuff like that. They're about to break out of the CAA warehouse, and then Kevin Hart's all, yes, put it up there, and he puts it up on high five, and The Rock's all, yes. He puts his hand up and his fingers are all the fucking place. He's all, wait there 2 seconds. He just cracks them all back, and he's all, forget about that. But you know what, I enjoyed it way more than what I thought, and nice easy chemistry, and there's like a good sort of anti-bullying thing in there. It's not like laugh out loud all the time, but hey, it's definitely, it's enjoyable film, very watchable.
If enough jokes to get you through.
Enough jokes to get you through. And even, not even at that, it's not even just like all the jokes are passable, you know, you kind of get a snicker. Some of them are pretty laugh out loud, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's good.
Well, does it make you more excited for the Jumanji reboot? What both of them are in?
Shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Rock and Kevin Hart's in the Jumanji.
Also, I just wanted to mention this too. Directed Central Intelligence by one of the strongest names I've heard in a while, Rawson Marshall Thurber.
Jesus.
What a name. Also directed Dodgeball and We're the Millers.
Oh, that guy.
And I like We're the Millers.
We're the Millers, funny. Yeah.
So he's three for three now.
Is that the only three he's directed?
Nah, he's done a lot of shit.
That whole striptease fucking scene that we were in, you're just like, what the fuck is the point of this?
It's pure just gratuitous. That's like, because
It's like Jason Segas even just stares at the camera and he's all, you know, like they completely call it out. Like,
they just chucked it on because it's Jennifer Aniston and they think that's what people want to see.
It's a big flash dance, sparks fucking thing on it.
And then she kicks the guys in the balls. Something like that.
Sounds like Suki's having a toss.
So he's getting
just scratching herself. In the vagine, what? Okay, we shall move on to topics.
You really could be a voice actor, wouldn't you?
I don't know. Just call me Michael Winslow, man. Don't know what that was.
Spoiling though. You're on too deep.
I don't.
That's when you pour water on the sink, just.
I've all faithful of.
That's pretty good too. Man, I've had them talents, Michael Breslin.
Maybe I can do that too. All
right. Spiteful cunt over.
A friend of mine taught me how to do it during an RE class once. RE is religious education.
That's where you learn the most, surprisingly. Not about RE, because you're not listening, but it's where you learn how to become a man.
One of the funniest things.
How many times have you used that in your adult life?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
RE or the old water drop. No, but one of the funniest things.
Scraps that... like... You want to get involved with this? Probably we say it.
Where's all fuck? That's class. That sounds like you're.
I got teach to do that thing. You talk away it.
Well, gives you a can. You're on your way, and you're like, fuck, I just get my
kind of got a fucking hiding there, like.
When you're doing it, you're pickpocketing every one of them.
Another thing you learnt, Harry.
Try to start me, I'll beat you with brains.
I've always said that's why Donatello's my favorite fucking Ninja Turtle. You can beat you up. Also, I'm wearing your very fetching T-shirt. Where'd you get this T-shirt?
Probably Primark.
For the listener, I'm wearing Michael's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles T-shirt because Turtles it is like team. A fucking.
It says party hard.
It does, and you do party hard, Michael.
They don't say that in the Turtles, though. They say party on, do they?
And they say, like, no, party on's like fucking Wayne's World, isn't it?
Party on! What did Turtle say? Cowabunga?
Cowabunga, just and fucking pizza and stuff.
Just his pizza.
Pizza!
<stuff.
laughs>
Stand myself, pizza!
That's the way I came. Pizza!
Pizza!
That should definitely be a new one. Anytime you're going to slap somebody, pizza!
Just grab some of my best shirt and stick a head on. Pizza!
That's a fucking blinder. I'm going to slap somebody.
Chad, you're shouting. Calm yourself. You're getting overexcited about the whole pizza bit.
Just t-shirt left.
It's kind of like a one on Gross Point Blank when he fucking grabs a TV and he's just all popcorn! Smash it over Dan Aykroyd's head.
Oh, pizza's class. Yeah. I'm going to try and start a fight up a time tonight. Just in case.
Pizza!
No, I'm not. But, aye.
Aye, so topics.
Topic, anyway. just popped into my head earlier on. We're chatting about Sam Worthington, and I says his career is like a sort of anomaly because he got like a.
Would you say it's not Worthington?
Okay. But, it's pretty thin, Riggs.
Anorexic.
But like, he got a huge push. I mean, like, he had Terminator Salvation and Avatar and stuff, and it seemed like he was huge for about 5 minutes, and then it's just sort of disappeared. I mean, like, he's kind of went back to Australian and he seems to be doing some projects, but
he has the Avatar sequels coming up now.
Yeah, which I'll probably put him back in the spotlight again. But I don't know, I was just thinking about actors who maybe choose the wrong projects, and because of it, their career suffers, or maybe just don't work as much in general, probably don't have like a personal decision, who you would like to see work more, or you would like to see get like a sort of career resurrection something like that.
But just to kind of go on the Sam Worthington thing first, I think the thing that happened with him is they were trying to push him to be this new action star.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, here's your new action star. He's ready, made, handsome, muscly action star.
I never bought and him just, as an action star.
That's the thing. Just nobody really bought into that. But if you see him in like smaller stuff, like I was said, Man on a Ledge and Paper Planes, I thought he was really good. He's like, he's like a good actor.
It's a Southern Crime one. It's him and Dean Stanton. What do you call him?
Harry Dean Stanton.
Who just turned 90 a couple weeks ago.
No, really? Is he still bitten about there? Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan, that's who I'm thinking of.
Jeffrey Dean
Morgan. Was he the comedian in...
Aye, that's Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan. They were like partners.
He's the guy in Walking Dead now. Yeah.
That's actually his name.
They were partners, and who else was in it? What do you call him from This Is England? He was Babyface Nelson in Public Enemies.
Ah, fuck. It was Stephen Graham.
Stephen Graham is in it, and Chloe Moretz is in it. And it's like a
that Southern, cast alone will make me want to watch this film.
It's a Southern crime film. It's not like, you know... I mean, it's not like Chinatown. It's like showing you a big fucking mad kind of crime that sort of, you know, affects all of us and all. But it's just a really cool film. It's sort of scary too. It's dark, and Jessica Chastain's in it as well.
Fuck, that's actually a really good cast.
I'm trying to.
The only thing that I've seen Sam Worthington pop up on recently
was this recent or
something special.
Texas Killing Fields. I literally just seen that, and you go.
And that's really, he's fucking really good in that too.
Yeah, I might give that a watch.
Texas Killing Fields. It's like. It's almost like two episodes of True Detective. It's not quite.
Which
as
series?
Heavy. Season 1, definitely. Right. But it's not,
we're going
not,
season
not
one on this
heavy,
one.
It's not quite as sort of, you know, theatrical.
Yeah,
but it sort of has that feeling about it. Like,
is it as existential?
Is there a Russ Cole in it who's constantly questioning life?
No.
Walk hand in hand on the Eternal Midnight. Jesus, there was some really over top there. Series one. You just kind of borrowed them because somehow McConaughey pulled it off.
It's like after season two, you start reanalyzing season one.
No, but even like for going back to like season one, people have done like a sort of reevaluation. They still say it's an amazing season. But Pazzaletto is the boy who obviously writes and created True Detective. He's definitely fucking guilty of the old purple prosy, just like overwriting. You know what I mean? And just having like. I think it was more blatant than series two when he had a fucking crime boss saying words like apoplectic. Like, that's a word that nobody would use. And even how it's presented, Vince Vaughn sitting there, he's all, I'm feeling pretty apoplectic today. You know what I mean? Like, it's so bad. It means, like, seething. You know what I mean? Seething with anger.
I would have thought they wanted an apple.
But anyway.
He's looking at football and there's really bananas and pears in it.
I'm feeling pretty apoplectic.
It's like 5 minutes to that line, he's just staring at it.
Or he freaks out when he sees an apple. Like epileptic, but only apples.
But anyway, back to that topic. Sam Worthington. It hasn't petered because obviously he's going to be huge again with the Avatar sequel.
No, but he's doing stuff.
He's doing stuff, but I'm just saying an actor who you would like to see kind of, not in the limelight more, but just doing more projects, you know what I mean? Or just maybe have a bit of a career resurrection. Because until recently, for me, it was Mr. Russell and Kurt. But, I mean, recently, obviously, with a Hateful Eight and Bone Tomahawk, it seems like his career, he's back in the public eye for the first
Fast
time, like,
Furious
fucking
too.
He's Fast and Furious.
The new Guardians of the Galaxy as well.
That's right, he's going to be Peter Quill's dad, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is he not playing, like, a moving planet?
Aye, he's, like, the personification of a planet or something.
Aye, that's
some weird.
Be, fuck, it's just a planet with Kurt Russell's big face, isn't it? Just,
well, no, I think he's an actual person, but they're going to have to explain why a planet is a person or something.
It
but,
seems mad.
But my...
drift into kind of, what do you call it, Jesus, Hitchhiker's Guide and stuff. And all. It's sort of, that's what was good about Guardians of the Galaxy. It was sort of really daft in parts like that.
Space opera, one might say.
No, it's not.
No, because I actually meant to bring this up, because when we first talked about it, none of us actually really knew what space opera meant. You took it as like an opera in space, but space opera stems from soap opera, so it's melodrama and stuff like that, just in space.
Anyway, what are actors Would you like to see back on top?
No, going back to Kurt, though. Mind, I watched Big Trouble in Little China.
Go on.
And he did the same wee moment that Peter Quill had in Guardians of the Galaxy. Obviously, he did it first. But well, Peter Quill's one is like, oh, you might know me by another name, Star-Lord. And like, who? And it's like, Star-Lord, man, Legendary Outlaw. But Kurt Russell does the exact same thing. And
Jack Burton.
And they're all like, who the hell's Jack Burton or whatever? But it's just funny that now they're going to be father and son, yeah, and they share that wee moment.
Was probably deliberately inspired by Big Trouble in Little China, and then they went, who would you pick? And then somebody went, obviously Kurt Russell, because he's inspired by that.
James Gunn has been planning this for years.
Hands down, Jack Burton is one of the greatest characters ever come out of this
Jack
film.
Burton.
When old Jack Burton goes in. One of my favorite scenes, I think I've mentioned this podcast before, but deserves a second mention, is see when they're kind of given the mystical powers at the end before they go on to fight the fucking, I can't even mind his name, but the bad fucker. The bad boy.
The bad boy.
Mine when they're in the lift going up and fucking it just... It just starts to hit Kurt Russell, but it's class because it's almost like he's coming up. It's like he's winged or something. He's all, whew. He looks right that way, but sideways where he's all, how you doing? He's all shady, smiling himself, and he's all shaking his head. It's fucking brilliant. He's all, how you doing? I'm feeling all right. It's all blinder.
Is she at the end?
She
so
needs a bottle cap, I think.
I'll go and take it out of there.
It's not
loaded.
It's an iPod. You're not loaded. Aye, so yeah, actors. Yeah. Come on. Give me some actors.
Mickey
Rourke? Did you call him by his Michael Rourke?
No, I said it weird. I was sort of half.
I think he said Romark.
Mickey
Romark.
Michael Rourke.
I don't know. I did something weird, don't I? But, I thought after... I think it was because nobody would hire him for a long time, and then there's that whole story about Stallone and all. I told you that before, didn't I?
What was that?
Well, he was out of work for ages, and then it was one of these things where he says the odd time he would like to go to a restaurant that he used to go to when he was big, and he says he could pretty much just about afford like a bowl of spaghetti in it and this kind of stuff and all, and so on or whatever. And it was either in that restaurant or it was a phone call that he got from Stallone saying, I'm making a remake of Kate Carter and I want you to be in it. And he says, do you fancy it? Not there, no. And he says, like, cool. And he says, right, sure, I'll get the people to get in touch with you. And so, are you busy and all? And he's all not busy, so right. So people get in touch with him and all, and he's all right. So the reason that you're on this here is because Stallone said that I wanted somebody that really looked like he could fucking beat the fuck out of me. And Mickey's just, oh, I know, I could do that. It's just one of these sort of things. And then I went on and they were like, great, okay, so they're offering you this amount of money for it. And he just says, no, that's like an insulting amount of money for... He says, not for just whatever, but because of who I am. And he says, I know my career's out, but he says, that's like an insulting amount of money kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, no, I'm not going to do it, just out of respect for myself, this kind of thing. And then Stallone rang him back and said, why do you not want to do it? Is it because of the money? And he was all, aye. And so Stallone says, right, he says, we'll get the money sorted. I'll get it, you know, we'll sort something out.
Mm.
And I'll get somebody to call you back. And so about a few hours later, he got a phone call back. And he says, right, now you've got the money that you want. Because like, he says, what price do you want? And he says, well, you've got that.
$10 million.
And so he said, right, sure, I'll see you on set and this kind of thing. And all. He landed up on set and all this kind of stuff and all. And it was one of these things where I think it was a producer or a first AD came over and he says, do you know what happened there? And he's all, what? And he's all, Stallone paid the difference out of his own pocket to get you on the film. Which is fucking really
fair
cool.
Fair fucks, like,
them,
mate.
Yeah.
Because they could have went for loads of other actors, especially actors who were probably fucking hot
I think
at that time.
It's really hard to insure him because of like things in the past and stuff like that there and all. And, like, it was,
boxing
and
shit.
Aye, and then...
The drug abuse.
Like, aye... Oh no, he wasn't that big. He was never that big a drunk.
No, I suppose alcohol.
The main thing was after A Prayer for the Dying, which was an MGM film by Bob Hoskins, where he played an IRA character. It's not a great film, but Mickey Rourke thought it was like one of his best films or his best performances.
I'm sure he's fucking crazy about the show. He donated £1 million IRA, like.
You know, and he thought it was one of his best films and this kind of thing, and all, and the studio didn't really like it, so he says, no, we're not really going to get back this, we don't like it. You know, they still put it out, but they didn't promote it the same way they promoted his other films, and apparently he fucking lost the fucking head and went publicly and named names about this fucking producer's an asshole and this whatever and all, and he's getting sick of the Hollywood shit, and he's sort of calling Warren Beatty a pussy and all this kind of stuff and all, and just saying, I hate these fucking kinds of people and all, and just really...
went on that one just...
pretty much, and just burnt a while out of bridges, like, and then,
I was literally just... But they say he's just burning bridges.
Pretty much, that's what happened. And then, like, obviously he couldn't get a job for ages. He made all these sort of small sort of films and stuff, and he didn't really get any money out of it. And then obviously that Get Carter thing happened. And then later on then, like, Robert Rodriguez started casting him. So Robert Rodriguez cast him in Once Upon a Time in Mexico, and then as Marv in Sin City. Tony Scott cast him. He was a small part in Man on Fire, and then he was a bigger part in Domino and all, and like, directors were starting to sort of go, wait, fucking, he is good, like, so just whatever, and it was just, he was kind of blacklisted and all, but I thought it was building up to, like The Wrestler. Like, The Wrestler is an amazing fucking film. I love The Wrestler, but the thing that's annoying me is that after it, I thought that was him back, and he's going to be making a like,
sort of film
after again. Quality film again, and it just didn't happen.
He done Iron Man 2, and then just kind of faded out.
That might have brought him back down a bit.
You know what I thought about Mickey Rourke, and I think it's a perfect example of someone that we're looking for, someone we're talking about.
He says they call out all his good stuff in Iron Man 2.
Which probably is fucking the only good stuff in the film. Well, but it's kind of strange one about Mickey Rourke, because I think with Mickey Rourke, and this sounds awful they say, but because like the plastic surgery and how his face looks, you can only really cast him in certain sort of roles now, you know what I mean? Because he's very strange looking. And as well, he seems like a sort of, I always kind of pity him when I see him in interviews, because he seems like a really fucking kind-hearted and nice guy, but he seems pretty fucking unstable, like, you know what I mean?
Well, it's like my
he seems like The Wrestler.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why that role and that performance touched so many people, because a lot of people weren't sure if it was a performance or was Mickey Rourke, like, you know what I mean?
He would allow a lot of dialogue on it for himself, like the speeches and stuff, and anytime he was talking about himself. And
because the parallels between that character, was it the Ram? Randy the Ram Robinson?
The Ram,
It's the parallels between Randy the Ram and Mickey Rourke's life are fucking ridiculously similar, like, you know what I mean?
That ending when he says, the only people that's going to tell me I'm through is you. And he's talking to the audience, but he's talking to us too. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just, I love that whole thing. I love that when it happens in
it's
films,
almost like, it is like it's breaking the fourth wall, but not that's still staying in the kind of realm of the film.
And it's like the thing of like when he came into the ring, when it was Sweet Child of Mine and stuff like that there, when he boxed, he used to come into the ring, the Sweet Child of Mine and all, there's all these wee things in it that are about him. And the song at the very end was a Bruce Springsteen song written specifically for the film.
I know this.
He gave them for free. They went to like a concert and all, and Bruce Springsteen says, oh, I kind of got this fucking song and all, whatever and all, and he says, oh, do you have it? It's mad. A Darren Aronofsky film was a while at it. It was just built on chances. Like, originally, he came to him and says, I really want you to do this part, but he says, we've got another actor which we can get money on, but he says, your name, I can raise fucking no money on your name at all. And it really takes a fucking a director with fucking tenacity, like him, like Darren Aronofsky, to go, right.
It's strange as well, because...
Was Nicolas Cage was meant to be him?
Cage?
Really?
But he says Nicolas Cage was all, I was doing it and I was training, and he says, and then, this is an interesting thing.
This is just Cameron Poe again, does it?
I would have had to get to the size of these guys, I would have had to take steroids, which I wasn't prepared to do. So what I said, they turn it down. And so I rang Mickey, and I says, you know what, you should ring, get your part back, because I'm not going to do it. But I'm kind of wondering, did Mickey take stories?
I'd say
Mickey's
so.
Big,
no, he's big, like, and stuff like that. But I'd say for
Nicolas
Cage's
age, kind of frame, like, because even the most built he's ever been is in Con Air, like,
and even in Con Air, he just looks like still a sort of thin guy with like
is,
a couple of muscles.
Big, like, he's got even from the family. But I mean, like, big shoulders and all.
Mickey was saying, like, Mickey Rourke's got like an actual bulky frame, like, you know what I mean? He's a big guy anyway.
Aye, because.
Whereas Nicolas Cage seems pretty wiry, you know what I mean?
Right, when you're presenting that kind of...
Aye?
Never too, yeah.
No.
My brother, my brother's a big boxing fan, like, and he's been to a wildcard gym, which is Freddie Roach's gym, and I think it's in Venice Beach in California, and this was the first time he was over, he had a Dottie t-shirt on and all, and then Roach started talking to him about Dottie and this kind of stuff and all, but don't give him feather, you. And all, and about how it was a fucking Amir Khan, it was just a fucking dodgy fight, like, about how it didn't keep going, it was called off for like a really stupid fucking reason,
yeah,
because he was fighting a lot better than what they thought he was going to, but that's where they got chatting the first time. And then the second time went over and got chatting to Freddie Roach and this kind of thing and all. And my brother was just chatting about boxing to him and all and this kind of thing and all these different fighters and all. And Roach was just all like, he's all, fuck, you should have been here about an hour ago. He says, we had like four, like really, I'm not as under as my brother, but he says, there's four fighters you would have really liked to see. And my brother's like, fuck, because there was a big fight coming up and he knew who they were and all. And then he was like, oh, fuck, I know what I mean. And he's all, so here, sure, do you want to see me gym down the stairs anyway? And he's just all, I don't really put you out. And he's all, nah, fuck it, it's grand. No, he's all, this is where I train Pacquiao and train, you know, all these different people. I think he trains Cotto as well, does he?
Aye.
This is where I train Pacquiao and Cotto when there's no press and stuff and all. And he says, your mum, go downstairs, I'm going to check it out and all. And they were halfway down the stairs. And he's all, aye, Mickey Rourke's training down here at the minute. So I was all, fucking, because his friends aren't on the box and his friends are all, what the fuck? They started getting interested then. And then, so Johnny went down that room anyway, and Mickey Rourke was bitten around the ring and all. And then, what was it? Roach turns, goes around, and he just goes, like, he's all, there's four air scares here to see. And he turns around, and he goes, Chucky Arla. And then he just started chatting away, like, doing different things and all. And they, like, fucking, like, do the fist bump and all that kind of stuff and all. And they were just chatting away and all. And Freddie Roach says he's a nice guy, but he talks a lot of shit. Like, and he says he just likes to fucking rile people. That's just his sense of humor. He just finds it funny, and he just that's the sort of sense. I'm like, that's what I'm saying, Chuck Arletta, you guys know, because he just wants to get a reaction out of you and all. And there's a fight that Mickey did, which was, I think it was one of his last fights, and there's always questions over whether it was a money fight or not. Like, it was a Russian fight where it was a bit of a.
Oh no! It was completely fixed. Like, he won the fight.
But... No, but it was like, Johnny was all, here, what's Craig? Why that Russian fight? And he's all, why'd you fucking ask him? See what he says. And Johnny's all, nah. And then Roach started laughing in his head. I was all right. He obviously knew that he knew what the crack was and all. But that's a mad one. Mm. Really mad. But he just says he just loved the. Like, even when they were leaving, he's all, I tell everybody in Ireland, they fuck off. he just, I don't know. He said,
even though he's
mad.
Fucking ridiculously proud, he is Irish.
I know, like, I know. No, he's just looking for a reaction. Back home, they fuck off, because he says that's what everybody thinks it's funny and all. he says it was the maddest thing. He just said he was like one of the coolest people he's ever met. Like, he says he just hang out and chat. He says he's a man's man. Like, but he just said he was well cool. Like,
I think it's strange. Well, we make it work that. It does seem very personable, you know what I mean? It does seem really nice, but then when you see him on talk shows sometimes, it just, you don't know what you're going to get. You know, it seems like he's a ticking time bomb sometimes, you know what I mean? Especially when he's got a couple, because that time when he was on fucking...
Graham Norton.
Oh, that was sad to watch, like, because he was fucked.
I don't like his thing,
man. It was sad because he was really Jessica blocked. Biel. It was some big actress, like an attractive actress, and he kept trying to get stuck on there and stuff like that, and he kept getting fobbed off, and, like, the audience was getting uncomfortable, and even Graham Norton, who's, like, a fucking master host and, like, really funny and, like, a master as well of kind of diverting awkwardness and making it funny, even he was struggling with it, like, you know what I mean? It was sad, but I mean, like, I don't know. Mickey Rourke, he's a strange case because he had his comeback and then it petered out, and I don't know if there will be another comeback. Like, he should have.
I think there will.
I think he should have won that. I do. I don't think he was robbed.
If I ever make it, I've got an adaptation that I'm going to stack him in. I'm going to imagine him as Shea Levine and Glengarry Glenn Ross.
Oh, that'd be fucking class.
He'd be amazing.
He'd be really good, right? He's really good at playing, like, sort of, even for a big guy, he's really good at playing desperate sort of types.
It was one time we did it a few years ago. And it was, because you obviously think of the Jack Lemmon thing and all, and I did the Shelley part, and I was like, I don't know how the fuck to do this at all, because I just don't want to be like Jack, and I don't want to be like pathetic and all. And then it's sort of like, I just sort of thought of him as like a prize fighter.
Aye.
And he's just all like, you have to respect me because I was fucking there, and if you don't, and instead of being pathetic, he was a bully.
Aye. And he's out there taking punches every day from people rejecting him on the fucking contracts and stuff.
When you read it, sometimes like it's more like he's a bully if you read it in one way than he is. And I thought of Mickey Rourke when I was doing it. I thought Mickey Rourke could fucking do it. You know,
I always thought about, like, in Glengarry Glen Ross, like Jack Lemmon in his prime, you would always see would be like, he would have been like Ricky Roma, but without the charm, because Shelley Levine's not that charm. It's like false charm, where Ricky Roma,
it's just dated charm.
But whereas Ricky Roma, he seems more natural with it, and it seems like he actually cares, where you can kind of see through Levine's. Now, maybe that's him just getting old and maybe getting lazy with it and stuff like that, not thinking about it as much, or maybe it's because it's dated. But I know what you're on about. You sometimes think about Levine back in his sort of pomp, Would it have been that sort of hulking presence you kind of maybe...
more just when you read the thing, when you're not, you're trying to not think about anything else, and you actually read the words, and you're just all, actually, he's not... Because in the film, it's more like he's convincing. He's trying to convince you. He's constantly on the sail. Whereas when he's a bully, it's like, you know, he gets what he wants from you no matter what. And even the thing about the daughter line, because in the film, it's just like, my daughter...
Mm.
Whereas when I did it, I thought it was more interesting to just kind of go, like you know, he doesn't care about the daughter,
yeah.
And he always, that's always his last resort.
Yeah,
he just goes,
it's like,
hey,
it's a polycard,
you know, my daughter. And it wasn't sad. It was just like you could tell it. You know, that's what I always try. You know, and that's the way. If you ever got Mickey Rourke to do, that's the way he should do. Like,
that's,
you know,
an older actor I want to see do more Jack Lemmon, but he can't because he's dead.
He's dead, isn't he?
Actually, one of my top four favorite actors. But going back, Michael, an actor, and we're probably going to speed up. So, an actor that you would like to see do more?
Shia LaBeouf.
I'd say about.
Interestingly enough, if we ever remake Glenn Ross, it'd be Ricky Roma, Shia LaBeouf.
we're just casting your.
Shia LaBeouf's Ricky Roma's meant to be 30.
Hey, you heard it here first. You know what I mean? Glengarry Glen Ross remake happening around 2022. And here's Mickey a cast.
That's a thing. It'd be amazing though.
It would be good. If you would have said that to me 2 or 3 years ago when I only really knew him from Transformers, I would have told you fuck off. But seeing just... He just seems like a fucking free spirit. Like, I want a lot of people give him flack about being mad, but he just seems like a free spirit. He's out there doing his own thing.
Like Brad Pitt's, you know,
he's definitely got his head screwed on too.
He's got a lot of man, like a mad press and all, and fury, but he's one of the best actors I've ever worked with. He's really dedicated. He just wants it to be better.
Sure, he ripped his fucking tooth out for fury, didn't
he? Aye, sure, he scarred himself as well. He kept cutting his cheek, so he had a scar for the film.
He's definitely not all there, like, you know what I mean? But I think that's about full on.
No,
like,
but I think it's when he talks and all in the interviews and all, he just seems like really, he's just passionate, I just want to make good, that's all.
Yeah,
that's,
no, I mean, you can replace a tooth, but you're going to give yourself a permanent fucking scar on your face, that's about mad.
Like. It's like, did you hear about that thing with Jared Leto playing the Joker? He sent all the other cast members, like, just weird gifts.
Yeah.
Like,
we do need to talk about Suicide Squad because apparently it's fucking shit.
Yeah, it's been getting a serious amount of flack.
But he sent Will Smith like a fish head or something. I can't remember what he said, but he just sent him something fucking weird. Like, and somebody asked him, Will Smith, in the interview, he's like, oh, did you send anything back or anything, or what did you say? And he said he left him a message saying, for me, this is just acting. Because, like, Jared Leto stayed in the character the whole time they were shooting and stuff, and just.
Didn't do him any favors because apparently he's one of the worst things about the film.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen the film.
No, I'm still looking forward to seeing it, even despite the bad reviews.
But back to Shia LaBeouf. I mean, I liked him when he was like, I liked the first Transformers film, and I kind of like, I liked Disturbia and even that one Eagle Eye. I just kind of liked it because for being that young and stuff, he has a bit of charm and he has a bit of charisma about him. And obviously he grew up doing stand-up and he was on that show, Even Stevenson. Also, I think that's just kind of bred from that air. But when you see, like, obviously he just had the whole downfall, like, after Indiana Jones and stuff, and just when he went a bit mad. Yeah. Like, what actually tipped that off? I can't even mind.
I don't know. It just seemed like it came out of nowhere that he just one day he was mental.
Shadow was mental. But, just, like, just with stuff he's doing now, and he seems to be going for like deeper, kind of more meaningful roles, and he's getting deeper into the whole process of acting and stuff. Like
the method,
and it's just, you know, he's a proper actor, and he can fucking do it. And yeah. And as Heron said, he's always just looking to make it better.
Yeah,
and even with the stupid stuff he does, like with that fucking video, is like, just do it and all that air, like. It's a bit of crack, and he just doesn't really give a fuck. Like, I mean, like, you can say whatever the fuck you want. Like, he doesn't care. You know what I mean? He's just wants to make something fucking meaningful.
Did you see that Charlie Countryman film?
What?
Charlie Countryman?
No, I heard it was good, though.
It's like, maybe like a mad kind of weird on there. Do you want to watch it?
Shia LaBeouf has also inspired the very funny song by Rob Cantor titled Shia LaBeouf, where Shia LaBeouf is described as being a fucking psychopath killer. Yeah. But then what I love is that no bar to him, taking a hand at himself. He shows up at the end of the video with Tom clapping in the audience like fucking Orson Welles and Citizen Kane.
Hey, I'm saying, like, he's happy to take a hand at himself. Like, he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, he really does not give a fuck. My actor, and he's, I'd say, what, top three favorite actors is Edward Norton. Edward Norton, just talk. You talking earlier on about...
So who's he going to play in Glengarry?
Who's he?
Who's he going to play in
Glengarry? He seems like a spissy. He seems like he could do a spissy.
He could do an amazing Williamson.
Aye, Williamson. I always forget his name. Spissy's character. But Edward Norton, you were talking about earlier on how Mickey Rourke in like the early 90s and stuff like that burnt a lot of bridges. Or sorry, you were talking about... Edward Norton done the very same thing. Basically... It was almost like insider knowledge that then was so kind of well known that everybody kind of knew of his reputation. His reputation preceded him. That in like the late 90s and early 2000s, when Edward Norton kind of came on the scene with American History X and Fight Club, he was notorious for like stepping on the director's toes and wanting to rewrite scenes and rewrite scripts and stuff like that. That's why he lost the role of fucking the Hulk. You know what I mean? That's, you know what I mean? But,
like, I'd be mad. Imagine if he stuck with Aaron Edward Norton was in the Avengers.
It's mental, like, I know. And don't get me wrong. I do think, as much as I love Ed Norton, I always thought that him as the Hulk was a...
Oh, Ed?
Ed Norton? But I've always loved fucking Norton. And like even the choice of him as the Hulk, I always thought that was a strange one. Like,
I liked that film.
I liked that film, and I liked him as the Hulk, but I do think Mark Ruffalo's a better fit.
They find... like amazing actors to get into those parts, like, you know, it's like they really try and do like proper thesbs in those parts, like, do you know what I mean?
I was even just very surprised that Edward Norton fucking took the role of the Hulk, because he's usually very choosy and he kind of usually sticks to the indies.
I think he is a Hulk fan,
but even at that, I was still surprised they done it, because he's a prima donna, but he's very particular in what he chooses, like,
but
you know what I mean?
Even at that time though, like, this was before Marvel was bought by Disney and stuff, so technically, the first Iron Man and Hulk were technically independent films.
They're still blockbusters.
I know,
like,
but
know
it's
I mean?
It wasn't as big of a thing as they are now, you know what I mean?
And first Iron Man, what was it? Fucking, there's a story that they had a script and all, and like it was John Favreau and Robert Downey Jr., and Robert Downey Jr. says so many times, I used to come on the Favreau's fucking thing and fuck a script off the wall and says, this is fucking shite. And Favreau Bell, don't worry about it, we're just going to improvise the whole thing. he said between them two, Robert Downey Jr. says that Tony Stark was pretty much a creation of John Favreau and himself.
Right. They brought themselves.
John Favreau is still down as a producer on the Avengers and all.
Because it was the thing of, he says when they were about to jump under the fucking, Robert Downey Jr. says the whole thing, the process got that loose, that he says he was about to jump under the Hummer. And he was just reading the lines again. He was just all, so I don't know, John, this isn't really that funny and all. And he says, John Favreau was behind a camera and a monitor or something. He just shouts over. He goes, what about if one of the armor people says, does peace, and you say no gang signs? And he goes, oh, yeah, no, it's good there. Do that. And he says, about to shoot the scene, like, and that's what happened. But he says, that, like, it's all the witticisms, like, you know, give me a scotch, I'm starving. Nah. All this sort of stuff, and he has the wee fucking rise out of the ground, fucking drinks, Kevin.
Fucking love that, you're gambling. I've always wanted a wee bar globe. But anyway, going back to Norton, what I really did like though is that Norton was kind of, I wouldn't say blacklisted, but he was put out the wilderness in the late 2000s, and he was doing like the odd indie. And I think that a lot of that was because he'd made a bad name for himself in Hollywood, and as well just through his own choice. He says himself he just kind of likes keeping private and doing smaller films. But I absolutely loved how it kind of came full circle in Birdman, because the character that Edward Norton is playing in Birdman is taking a piss out of his reputation.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know what, because he never ever talked about it in interviews about this reputation they had, but he kind of went back to it then and just kind of pointed the finger at himself and was like, you know what, I was the prima donna actor. Yeah. And he's so good in that film too. He got an Oscar nomination as well.
Him and Ruffalo were nominated in the same category as like the two Hulks going up against each other.
Green v Grey.
I don't know why they didn't make a big deal of that in the Oscars. They could have had some crack with that.
Like. The thing is, I mean, even if they did, maybe it's a wee bit of a sore subject for everyone.
Maybe Norton's not too not thrilled too that Ruffalo took his fucking job.
Ruffalo Jr. like publicly said something like, I was not a team player.
That's exactly what he said. He says he's not a team player, and it's weird for Robert Downey Jr. to come out and say something like that.
Quite cutting, like,
it's quite cutting, and as well, I mean, usually Downey Jr. is quite affable most of the time, so for him to come out and take a swipe at another actor, I was surprised at that too. But in fairness, I mean, Norton's probably not himself too. Like, you know, I mean, apparently he tried to rewrite the whole script of the Hulk, and then he was trying to make.
A famous thing is that when he gets involved in the project, his production company is co-producer on it.
Yeah.
So they have the rights to order reshoots, and he wanted all these reshoots and stuff.
Sure, even like, I mean, that was the fucking reason that, Jesus Christ, what's his name? Is it Tony Kaye, American History X? Sure, Tony Kaye, the director of American History X, Alan Smithy, that film. So basically he took his name completely off it because of Norton, because like Norton apparently just tried to take over directing.
But he wasn't, you know, like, I mean? No, because I was actually watching it the other night, and I might talk about it in a minute. We leave that to the end.
leave it.
So, anything more in Edmonton?
No, I think it's good that he came back a Birdman. I don't really know what projects he's got with Birdman. I don't know what that.
No, it just sounds like it was a way in a trip. So it's just that he came back a Birdman.
came back in a Birdman Express.
Back, just... He was a fucking Birdman.
But it was just nice to see him back. And as well, I mean, like, he kind of kept a career taking over. He was doing a lot of stuff with Wes Anderson. Always a kind of smaller roles, but. It was nice to see not only him back in a big role and sort of get Oscar nominated and get a lot of adulation again, but it was just also nice to see him kind of at nothing and poke fun at himself, because he's always came across, even though he's one of my favourites, as being a really fucking serious dude, like, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, no cracking at all. Very kind of Andy's method. And
he's an actor.
An actor.
My two favourite films of his have to be American History X and 25th Hour. Those are my two favourites of his. Primal Fear's great. It gets to be a pantomime, but I still love 25th Hour.
I mean, I think when he starts to morph into the other character in Primal Fear, it's a bit like it's too much. You know what I mean? It's nice sort of seeing the geology and that starting to break out, but.
He was nominated for that, wasn't he?
First ever film, too. Mm. First ever performance. At that point, when he got that film, he was working as a waiter.
You know first, I mean? The first three films I ever seen of him was Primal Fear, Fight Club, and The Score. And in all three films, he's playing two different people. Basically.
Yeah, true. The score's not the riddle one too. I like that film.
Marlon Brando's last one.
I like it. Big Brando as well. He's fucking some size, not he?
You must get to some point, but Jesus, go on, look at me, like.
Do you know what?
I need to do something about this, like.
But when you're that old, you still give a fuck.
I'm always at the opinion that see when you get to a fucking certain age, because you've lived your life and you've just kind of fucking had to put up with people's bollocks and I watch your fucking time, blah blah blah, you should be allowed to get fat as fuck when you're older. You know what I mean? Just eat whatever you want. You've lived your life, enjoy yourself. Fair enough, your health may suffer. You know what I mean?
Well, you're just waiting to die. That's it.
Jesus, mate. Old people can have fucking fun too.
No, but I'm saying what you're saying. Like, if you take that path,
you're not saying what I'm saying.
No, because you're saying once you hit a certain age, you can kind of just let yourself go and just fucking do whatever you want.
Have a bit of crack, like, you don't care. I'm basically saying you don't care what other people think. I'm not saying that you're fucking waiting to die.
No, but I'm saying waiting to die in the sense that you're at a certain stage where. You don't care about your health anymore. You're just going to do whatever the fuck you want.
No,
because
I didn't mean like, okay, right.
Well, that's the way it came across.
Okay.
That's basically what you said, Jim.
Okay, Flair, okay. But yes.
That's not condescending at all.
Edward Norton.
It was worse because it was bare knee. Touched
oh. The knee. Edward Norton, Mickey Rourke, and...
Shalabu.
So that's a three we want to see you do more. And hopefully
going to be in Heron's remake. Who's Baldwin? Who's taking over Baldwin?
Heron's doing that.
We'll see. In the play script, that's not there.
You adapting the play, not the film?
No, we'll see. The play, the Baldwin thing, the play's more like a Reservoir Dogs thing. Whereas you never, like, Mitch and Murray is this big fucking force that's just like, oh, we're fucked and all, it's the boss and all, but you never see the boss.
Mm.
And in a way that it kind of is more interesting.
So it's always more threatening.
If you're
nothing is scarier.
Leave out the Baldwin speech and just go straight down, hit the ground rolling.
Fuck Baldwin, Colm Heron says.
I didn't say it. But
that's about a fucking tablet. <fairness, like.
laughs> Colm Heron says, fuck Baldwin.
Press the word fuck and Baldwin. two separate times. Attach him together.
I know, 64 episodes, he managed to fucking stitch me up just.
Literally stitch. Some audio deal. Recommendations.
My recommendation is Green Room. Just was only released at the end of last year. think I talked about it in the podcast a couple weeks ago. It's one of Anton Yelchin's last films. Essentially, it is about a punk band who go and play this fucking gig out in the, like, the backlands. I think it's in like the Midwest America, but they don't realize until they get there that it's a neo-Nazi club. And then a murder, someone's killed in the club, and basically they're locked in the green room of the sort of the facility, and it's about them trying to break out and get out there alive. And it's just really good. There's really good tension. Patrick Stewart's on there, and it's just great to see him play against him, because usually he's playing like the noble, kindly old man, but in this he's playing the head of a fucking neo-Nazi faction. Mm. Like, and he does it really, really well. And there's just, there's some really unbelievably tense scenes, and there's some kind of sad parallels too. Now that Anthony Elchin's died with his own life, there's a scene in there where he's all, I can't die in here, I'm too young. And it just kind of gets you a bit more. He's excellent as usual. And the people acting around him, I think it's, can't remember her name. Imogen Poots, I think she's very, very good.
Poota!
She's got a
Poota.
But, it's good fun. So, watch it. It's from the guy who done
Blue Ruin. And his next one's called Red something.
No, I write enough. I Blue Ruin, Green Room, Red House.
Red Man or Young.
Anyway, your recommendation, sir?
My recommendation is American History X.
Oh!
It was actually just mad that it came up, but, I ended up watching it the other night. I just flicked over and I was like, oh, there's a black fella getting his head stomped on that curb. I was all, alright, this is American History X.
The infamous scene.
Literally,
the first thing. They do it at the start, don't they? And then they do it about an hour and
no, but the whole bite the curb thing, that just happens once, doesn't it?
I'm not sure, just the start of bite the curb, eh?
No, because I think it happens at the end.
It's so fucking.
No, because it's the opening scene, like, isn't it?
Is it?
It's at the start. I haven't watched American History X in years.
I thought also, that happened like halfway through.
I know, but no, because he's like having sex with a girlfriend and all, and then they see the cars being broken, and then he runs outside and all that there. That's the opening scene.
Uncomfortable
What's
fact.
That heck, anyway?
I think so.
Uncomfortable fact about American History X. Edward Norton's character, is it Derek Vineyard?
Derek Vineyard.
Derek Vineyard is the absolute spit of my day. And you knew this.
The tattoos and everything.
Based in a real life neo-Nazi as well.
Aye.
I was reading, just, you know, when you watch a film, you start looking up the facts. If you've seen it a million times, you doesn't, whatever. I think it's, whatever Edward Norton done on it, whatever it is, I think it's a fucking great film. I think apparently the director said that he edited it himself more on it. It's one of these things where, I mean, they're both artists and this kind of thing, and if Edward Norton kind of felt like, right, it's not that I'm giving myself more time, I just think that the character of Derek needs to be in it more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, come on the fuck, get me in there. You know, and it's just, I think the film's fucking great. You know, I read all these things, like, you know, that apparently he couldn't smitty it, he couldn't do the director thing because he'd spoke publicly about it, so he had to keep his name on it.
And I actually thought he did smitty it, but then it's strange because on IMDb, even if a director smitties a film, then their name still goes up as the official director, you know what I mean?
I don't know. No, so
IMDb's all, like, people, it's like Wikipedia, put stuff in so people can put on a director.
But I think, no, it's not on the DVD or it's not on the film.
No, it's strange because even though he said that he smitted it, any sort of promotional material, anything he sees, he's still there as director. Like.
No, because he broke the, it's a guild.
A guild clause.
It's a guild clause. If he goes and talks about it and talks publicly, I think he went to Variety or something and told them how he had said he had a shit time working with Edward Norton and this kind of thing. If he did that he wasn't allowed to do. That's like a guild thing. You're not allowed to do it.
You can't speak about it, like.
So we had a whatever, but. And the whole thing. Actually, the head of the Nazi group, they actually wanted Brando to play it originally. They tried to get Brando.
Already?
That's right, Brando still would have been alive. So, yeah, because American History X, 99, is it? Or 98?
Something like
that. It's around there, anyway.
Because it's fucking Pope from Prison Break, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Stacey Keach.
I like him.
He's a good actor.
He's good.
I kind of forgot how good it was. I remember it was like, you know, when you're younger, you sort of, that's a certain type of film. You know what I mean?
It's dark and it's adult, and you think, oh, this is something that
but
I haven't really seen before.
Satisfy you. It's just like, oh, they're just doing this. This is the scene where they wreck this thing and all that. But then I actually think I get more shocked at things now. I appreciate them more. Like, you know, like,
you're becoming old and conservative.
It's just like, I suppose, when you watch too much fucking mad shit when you're young and you know, you become a bit desensitized, when you get a bit older and you start to realize, no, that is fucked up, that's a bit whatever. Yeah.
you really think about it a little bit more.
Into the film more, like there's so many fucking scenes in it, like, you know, the scene we, the sort of short scene with Elliot Gould and that kind of thing and all at the dinner table. I kind of forgot.
I think it's the best scene in the film. That's my favorite scene where he just starts calling like all these fucking Jewish slurs, and then he kind of gets up. It's my favorite scene in the film.
Yeah, and he's all, "This is your family. What are you doing?" and all this kind of stuff and all.
Why is he there again?
He's Gomi Hazma.
Oh, all right.
And all, and he starts calling him a kike and all this kind of stuff. It's really a mad scene and all. And then I think there's a beautiful line in it because he just says, "I'm sorry, this isn't going to work," to the mother and all, and then. No. What does he say? He's gone. He's lost. You know, he's not there anymore. And then she just says he's just a boy that's lost his father. You know, and I was like, that's a fucking great line. Like, you know what I mean? And it really summarizes the guy. And my favorite thing is at the end when he says, "I'm starting to think that the reason that happened to me was because of you." When he says to his friend in prison, the black guy.
Yeah.
And that's one of the best parts of the film for me. It really.
It's the logical way that the film would. Well, you would think it's a logical way that the film would go to kind of achieve some sort. I wouldn't say a happy end because it's definitely not a fucking happy end. It is a pretty bleak film, but
it's the hope.
And what I like about it is that it's not overdone. Obviously, he befriends a black emmett and stuff like that there, but it's not like they're all fucking hugging each other and holding hands towards you. You know, it's just on the very realist sort of way that they're looking out for each other and they're pals, but it's not over the top or rammed down your throat.
And that was the kind of moment that I thought this actually, to me, has a similar quality to it as 25th Hour. Like, the score and stuff and all, it's big. And that's when I started thinking, wait, that's the kind of film Edward Norton really does like to make. Those big things that are questioning any problems that are wrong with America and stuff. And those two films specifically. And even Fight Club in a mad sort of way as to...
It's questioning capitalism, like, you know what I mean?
And, the one thing is, that's the thing. Remember they had the problem about Donnie Brasco when he says, "I'm not the most important scene in it," where he's just all, "You're becoming like them." He says, "I'm not becoming them, I am them." That to me should have had a lot more weight than it.
Aye.
It's the scene when his brother's shot him, when he's holding him in the toilet.
It's really,
I don't
emotionally drain him, I think. You know, I think it's fucking really...
I don't think he's good in that scene at all.
No?
No. I think it's his weakest scene in the whole film.
I think so. I think it's really emotional.
Because he's just it's sort of weird because when he sort of looks like he's weeping, he looks like he's smiling too, and it's the way his face is.
But I think it's more natural in your sort of... Because people don't just typically cry like you see on fucking film. Like, there's some people who cry and actually look or smile, or people who react in fucking very strange ways. I like the fact that it wasn't kind of played as straight as him just bawling his eyes out.
I just think, because it's one shot, essentially.
Yeah.
I just think the director kind of left it on that one shot, and I just thought he could have... There's a better shot there, or he just thought, you know, all right, this is the scene where he gives everything, and I just didn't think I had it. It's the one I thought maybe because I was so under the film that this scene's going to hit me now again, but it just didn't. It's just a personal thing. I just didn't think he was as good as he has been in other stuff in that scene. I thought that scene kind of let it down a wee bit.
Yeah,
and it's the most important, so it's kind of annoying.
But you still recommend it?
I still recommend it. It's an amazing film. It's an amazing film. Like, the whole film, it is a summary of its parts. It's just... Some people love that scene. Some people think it's a really well-performed scene. It doesn't matter because the emotion of the end of the film and you hear Edward Furlong, you know, kind of round off the film and all, you still get the punch of it.
Yeah.
And that Edward Norton's getting dragged in. They sort of do double agent with the Nazis and... You know, the police and all, and you know, you see another film there nearly, which would be interesting to see. American History X.
You could cast that as well. You could do that. After
I'll cast
it.
I'll cast it for you, Ed. You know what I mean?
Ed Norton.
I'll give you a few more takes at that fucking scene when somebody else dies. Then
I won't recall it then. Your recommendation, Michael.
My recommendation is Say Anything.
Oh yes,
it's
good.
It's a lovely.
What's it?
Wait, John Cusack, Cameron Crowe film?
The
holding the stereo over the...
Cast a Cameron. Classic Cameron Crowe.
Tell me why you like it, Michael.
Because it's amazing.
That's a good film.
Do you think he was cast in High Fidelity because of Say Anything?
I think he was definitely cast in High Fidelity, I think, because of his sort of series. Like, 80s films where he kind of, I mean, like, John Cusack kind of defined 80s culture a lot, like, in some of the performances he had done.
But I think him and Say Anything, because I seen Say Anything after I kind of seen, like, High Fidelity and just John Cusack doing his John Cusack thing, and it's kind of there in the background of Say Anything, but the character of, I can't even mind his fucking name. What's his name in Say Anything?
Matt Dillon's in it, isn't he?
It doesn't matter. But
no. Is it singles?
The actual character he's playing, it's different from just standard John Cusack kind of stuff.
Which is,
I think,
a good thing. I think that's why I like saying anything so much.
And he's just such a weird kind of character. Like, he's really into kickboxing and stuff, and like nobody knows what kickboxing is in the '80s and stuff. Mm. And he's just a really nice guy in it, and he just likes the scared, and basically, Fraser's dad just fucks everything up.
Do you know what? I've always meant, I think that's why. No, honestly, but I think that's why Sanning stands out, because usually we're like 80s teen rom coms or John Hughes films, it's just focused on like the teens and stuff like that there, and then parents are kind of non existent. Like, they're there as like a force, but you never actually see them on screen. But that's one of my favorite things about Sanning, is the subplot with fucking John Mahoney.
That's the best thing.
It's really good. And then, especially when he goes to visit him in prison and stuff like that there. Because
I'm incarcerated.
No, that's such a good line. I think he delivers that really well. But
Lloyd Dobler. I'm incarcerated, Lloyd.
But like, I've always liked that. I know, but
he's loving that.
It's just the way he said, "I'm incarcerated, Lloyd."
But do you not like the fact that John Mahoney isn't just presented as being, "Oh, it's this fucking adult, doesn't know what he's doing. He's getting the fucking family and the financial ruin and stuff he got there, and doesn't give a fuck when he's in prison." I love that they make him around the character. You can tell that he really loves his daughter. He gets his really nice chemistry with him, and it seems like he likes fucking John Cusack too. But then he gets incarcerated.
Lloyd.
Lloyd!
I'm incarcerated, Lloyd.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about Lloyd for Entourage.
Lloyd!
Okay, we'll wrap it up there, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Let us know what your favorite quote from Say Anything is.
Or have you ever been incarcerated?
Or just go on our Facebook and say anything.
Very nice. Or send us your best John Mahoney impression saying, "I'm incarcerated, Lloyd!"
Oh, Billy.
Oh, that's nasty. Okay. where was it?
You're doing that.
Leave us comments, reviews. No, that's not it. You can message us on Facebook, Let's Talk More Movies Podcast. You can tweet at us at Talk More Movies. Or you can email us, letstalkmoremovies@gmail.com. You can also leave us comments, reviews on Acast, iTunes, whatever podcast service you like. I have been your host, Michael Breslin. Shanko has been Shanko.
Yeah.
Calm Harris with Calm Harris. Episode
64, baby.
I'm a coster in life. Thank you so much. Goodbye. Pizza! Pizza!
Love a pizza.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.